Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. We're so excited to be joining you. We're here to talk about your dogs, your cats, and maybe even some small critters. Anything you've got a question?
We've got answers for all of it.
The Marty and Laura Show is brought to you by Veterinary Village. With locations throughout Wisconsin, Veterinary Village is dedicated to enhancing the quality of animal and human lives today and into the future.
Welcome to the Marty and Laura Show. I am Laura.
And I'm Marty.
And we have been discussing adult ADD, so there's that.
Yep.
Welcome to Marty and I trying to do 15 things at once, but we are here today to answer a listener request, and the listener request was how to break down training into a schedule for your dog so that it can, you know, have the boundaries and do the things that you want it to do. We had the CGC episode last month, and so we're just kind of trying to drill down on that. And we have some ideas for baby puppies on up through teenage, on up through, yes, you can teach old dogs new tricks.
Maybe.
I know, right? We are old dogs and we are learning new tricks every day, Marty. So that's all I got.
I work really hard to develop new tricks every day. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes, I think you're...
If we can do it, the dogs can do it. I promise.
Okay. Good.
All right.
So we kind of kicked this off by talking about our collective history of puppiness.
Yes. Yes.
And I can tell you, and I know you've got a similar situation, that I've been married for 44 years, been out of vet school 44 years. And I don't think there's been a year that's gone by that I didn't have a puppy in my life. Now, some of them were dogs that we've purchased. Some of them are dogs we rescued. Some of them were dogs that we bred. And some of them were dogs we raised for Canine Companions for Independence. Right. But in our career, in our lifetime, I have had parades of puppies through my life. I don't really know what it's like to not have a puppy in my house at any given time.
And honestly, I have poor little Simba here who got caught up in a torrential downpour and a thunderstorm a minute ago, and he's resting peacefully now. And this is, I couldn't even tell you, going back to 1975, six, that I have had and many multiple young dogs, old dogs, new dogs, rescue dogs, mutt dogs, puppies I bred, puppies I raised. I don't know how to not have a dog in some level of training. My own dogs, other people's dogs. Remember, I got paid to do this for a living as a professional handler. I had new dogs on a rotating basis. Every couple of months, I get a brand new dog that had to learn a brand new schedule and a brand new set of things. And so training dogs has literally been my entire life, as long as I can remember. So we have some tips and tools for you guys based on sound, long-lived experience.
Yeah, real life experience.
Real,
this is not from a book, folks. This is the real thing.
This is the real McCoy, guys. And there are good books and there are good resources. But truly and honestly, I think some of the things that we can suggest to you, you might not even find in a book. Well, Marty did write that one book. So I'm saying.
That one book, yes.
That one book.
Your pandemic puppy, which I was coerced into writing because it was the pandemic. But
by me, but I might say,
if you just take pandemic out of the title, it still applies to all the things. There might be, you know, a handful of things in there that really pertain to being pandemic oriented. But the reality is puppies are the same now as they were before COVID. Puppies are going to always be the same. They're always puppies. So it goes through a lot of things with puppy selection and puppy raising and the behavioral part and the medical part. And so there's a lot of really important information in there. So just kind of put your hand over the pandemic word and then read
pretend
the
that
rest.
Isn't there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we could re-release it with like an X over that.
Yeah. Well, my publisher said we had to redo enough of the book that it wouldn't just be a republication.
Oh,
she was pretty clear about that.
Bummer.
But
okay.
One of the book companies said that it was the best puppy book, and this is DogWise, the people who do dog publications, said it was the best puppy book they'd ever seen. So I have to say that it probably has some merit, even if you just put the X across it.
So let's talk about, we have our new puppy. And we've gone to Dog It, or we've gone to AKC, or we've done the research, and we know, and we are now in our home with our new puppy. And I think one of the things that you and I have talked about more than once is the idea that every interaction we have with our pet at whatever age it is actually training.
Sure is. I just let one of my puppies out of the X pen, and he had been walking around on the pool cover and discovered that there is no pool cover. Turns out that really young puppies just bob right to the surface and they swim pretty well, but you shouldn't leave them swimming for very long. So yeah, you got to kind of pluck them right out of the water. So yeah, that was a learning experience for him. I picked him up and explained to him that maybe that wasn't his best choice. And I don't think he's going to do that again. He learned that really fast. There are certain things that you learn more concretely than others. Let's just say. But
if
yes,
you're a puppy,
every experience.
Yes. Yes, my puppy learned when the thunderstorm started half an hour ago and he was outside that mommy would come and rescue him when the big loud boomers were happening, but that he didn't have to cry about it because he's a very brave boy.
Yes. And every experience is a learning experience, whether you think they're learning or not. When you turn your back and they grab a steak off of the breadboard, they just learned that when you turn your back, they can grab a steak.
There's steak on the breadboard.
Exactly. And they will think that there's steak on the breadboard for the rest of their lives because one time ever, a steak was there.
You know, so and you I think that's so interesting, Marty, because sit over here doesn't mean sit over there. So why does it always mean steak on the breadboard? Can you explain that to me?
Because it's a very positive experience. We were at a dog show yesterday, and it's so funny when you walk through the parking lot of a grocery store, a dog show, wherever it happens to be, and there's a dog in the vehicle, not in a crate, loose in the vehicle. Where is the dog always sitting?
Front driver's
always
seat.
In the front driver's seat. How long does it take a dog to figure out that the controlling position of the vehicle is behind the wheel? And unless you're in the seat, the dog is, and sometimes even when you are and it's not very safe, the dog is sitting on the seat of the car. So my dogs only ride in the car in crates. I'm going to be very clear about it. And I know yours are the same, but how long does it take a dog to figure out that that is the power position? Dogs learn certain things really quickly and really concretely. And then there's other things they're like, well, I can't remember that. It's convenient, isn't it? It's sort of like partners and spouses and...
Yes, children. Stuff. You know, I think that the listener request that this came for was talking about a schedule. And so one of the things that I talk about is that you can do three things three times a day for 3 minutes with any age of dog, particularly good for younger dogs. Like my little guy here is 3.5 months old, little Simba. And we do three very easy things three times a day for no more than 3 minutes. So wait in his crate before he gets his breakfast because he eats his breakfast in the crate. And so he has to sit there quietly without screaming, without like scratching at the crate, without having a hissy fit because he's hungry. He needs to sit there quietly before he gets his breakfast. So that's a wait. And then when we go out to go potty, he has to wait at the door. Different kind of wait, different situation. Because like we talked about earlier, dogs, a wait here and a wait there are not the same wait for these dogs.
Right. Dogs are not generalized learners. And as Ian Dunbar has said many times.
Right. And so he does that. So that's a learning. So that took less than 3 minutes. And then at night, before he goes to bed, he has to do a watch me. He has to stand still and look me in the eye and make eye contact, just like that. And so he can have his cookies so he can go to bed. He learned three things. It took me less than 10 minutes in the entire day. And if I do that every single day, the dog learns really fast. And all of our dogs will. And it involves food, right? We always love food. So that positive thing, what'd you say? The thing they learned really fast was because it was a positive experience. Involved food. And now Simba's going to share with us. He's going to squeak his rabbit. Because he's learned that that's a way to get attention when I'm not looking at him.
Working for him.
There you go. So what about you? What are your tricks and tools?
Well, I have a schedule that's less regimented than yours.
Much.
Mine operates on my surgery schedule, my appointment schedule, and then all the crises that fill in the little gaps around it. Mm-hmm. So there are times that training for any kind of really structured training just doesn't work. But they still need to be taught. They still need to learn. And there are some high priority things to teach, and then there's some lower priority things to teach. So emergency down, emergency come, those are top priorities. Those really have to be trained early on. Mm-hmm. But some of the other things, the general rule of thumb for a lot of dog trainers is 100 experiences in 100 days. Mm-hmm. And there are days that I have just worked a 15-hour day, and the thought of 3 minutes of training is just almost too much to bear. Now, some of it's pretty basic stuff. Like, I mean, let's face it, puppies pretty much revolve around when they have to go potty and when they have to eat. So yes, those things are structured into your life. Those you can't really change. And those are things that you can teach. But 100 experiences in 100 days, if I have just worked a 15-hour day, I am not going to have the opportunity to pack up my dog and go to the dog park or go to the playground and let them see children and, you know, have the kids feed them little crackers with, you know, like the little Ritz crackers with cheese between the layers, all the fun stuff. So my 100 experiences in 100 days may mean tonight you get a piece of cantaloupe and you've never had cantaloupe before. So woo, that's pretty exciting. Or maybe it's green beans. The other thing may be I went to Walmart during COVID and there are 11 types of bath mats that you can buy at Walmart on any given day. There's some that are shiny and some that are bristly and some that have square holes and some that have round holes and some that are slatted and some that are not. And so you can pretty quickly say, okay, I'm done for today. But if you put a bath mat of bristles or a bath mat of shiny round holes on the floor or in the area where the puppy's playing, I just gave them an experience that I didn't have to put a whole lot of effort into other than I went to Walmart and bought 11 bath mats. And they do look at you a little strangely because I bought two of all. So I was buying 22 bath mats in one trip to Walmart. I'm sure the lady at the checkout thought I was really some kind of a nut
this
job.
This lady, I don't know about her.
Woohoo. But I mean, those are some things that you can do that expand the puppy's horizons without a lot of effort on a day that you simply can't because you've worked, you've had Zoom meetings, you've got PTA meetings, you've got all this stuff going on, you've got baseball, you've got soccer. Sometimes it's just too much to bear to think about one more thing. So you can kind of make it simple. Don't beat yourself up. If you miss that 3 minutes of training on one particular day, it's not the end of the world. Puppies are very elastic, very plastic, and there's a lot of things that you can do to make that work. But on the days that you can, say you don't work on the weekend, but you have the kids going to soccer, take the puppy to soccer, take your exercise pen, take your leash, take your poop bags, all the stuff, and take the puppy along. So do the experiences that you can, because those social experiences are very, very important to puppies. And they have to have 100 experiences. And you could do like 8 experiences at a soccer game. I mean, let's face it.
Right. Right. Kids, soccer balls, squeaky toys.
But, you know, walkers,
old people, young people, hats, raincoats,
all the stuff,
right. All the things. And so I think that you were talking about an emergency come and an emergency down. And I think those are absolutely critical and go back to what we were talking about earlier, food. So when the puppy doesn't come to you, instead of chasing it and yelling it and waving things in the air, which is going to make it run away, if you rattle the food bowl and show them a smelly piece of chicken, puppy is going to come to its name and you're going to give it lots and lots of praise even when you're ready to kill it.
Because it came, even if it didn't come under the right circumstances, it still came. And remember, sometimes running the other direction is how the puppy will chase you and follow you. Is that might be the best way to get the puppy to come, not to run after it, but to run the other way and make it into a game. And then the puppy starts to pay attention. And the same thing, if they pick up a sock and you don't want them to eat it, you start running the other direction. You start to do some things that get their attention. They're like, oh, wait, I'm missing something. And so then they'll follow.
One of my favorite tricks, and honest to God, I learned this from the field trial guys, you know, the horseback field trials, the dog gets a bird that you didn't want it to get and it won't give it back because it's their bird, right? And so you can get yourself worked into all kind of a fluster, trust me, chasing around a dog that doesn't want to give you back this precious thing that it has caught. So the field trial guys will throw their hat. Everybody, all the field trial guys wearing a hat, not a big old cowboy hat, usually like a baseball hat, right? They throw their baseball hat and that catches the dog's attention and you can kind of lure them in with a baseball hat. And I have also seen them, big, tough, burly field trial guys, lay down on the ground, just like straight out lay down, because then the puppy's like, oh my God, he died. I'm going to have to go check on him.
Yep. Yep, you've got it.
And it works. It totally works.
Hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do at the time. And if it's a tool, and especially if you're in a crisis,
yeah,
those are the things you have to keep in mind, because yeah, you may find yourself in a really critical situation where that puppy is just, you have no other choice. And there's traffic and there's bad stuff. And like, if it means, then don't lay down on the road. But
don't lay down in the middle of the road, no.
But sometimes that's what it takes. Yeah. So you throw your coat down, or you pick up your kid and you like use the kid for a lure, whatever.
Don't
it takes.
Squeak the child, okay?
No. Don't do that. But
the more important thing is to practice this at home and to have the consistency.
In a controlled setting where the dog is on a long line. Long lines are really important tools we should talk about.
Yeah. Yes.
But if you're a fenced area or on a long line, those are the times to teach these kinds of important skills.
Hey, friends. Did you know that the Marty and Laura Show website has a special page just for young animal lovers? Whether your child is meeting their first pet or already dreaming of becoming a veterinarian, Kids Corner is a place to explore animals through creativity, curiosity, and age-appropriate learning. Designed for young animal lovers and their families, these resources encourage empathy, responsibility, and a lifelong love of pets. Start off with a free coloring page. That's right. A new coloring page is available regularly. Download one free and check back often for new designs. And if you love that free page, take your coloring adventure further with the 10-page Color Me Pets coloring pack for just $5. Each page is filled with adorable, breed-specific dogs and fun educational prompts that spark creativity and curiosity. This pack is perfect for kids who want to explore, who want to color, and who want to discover more about pets. It encourages careful observation, fine motor skills, and an appreciation for animals, all while providing hours of fun. Plus, it's an easy, printable download, perfect for rainy days, long car rides, or creative play at home. Artwork by award-winning artist Sandy Mesmer, the Color Me Canine Collection brings even more adorable pets and fun designs. Explore full coloring books available online through Sandy's shop link on our page. Visit martyandlauraShow.com/kids-corner to learn more.
Doggett simplifies the puppy buying journey by connecting families with the perfect breed and responsible, health-verified breeders. They are the only breeder marketplace that verifies health clearances and responsible breeding practices. Through their personalized puppy matcher tool and matchmaker services, they educate and guide buyers every step of the way, ensuring a seamless process and a perfect match for their lifestyle. From initial breed consultation to introductions with top breeders, Doggett makes responsible puppy ownership easy and stress-free.
I will often use a long line in a fenced area if it's a particularly recalcitrant or distracted young dog, not a baby puppy so much, but about 6 months old when they hit their terrible twos of the same version of children, right?
Right. I mean, until a puppy is between 4 and 4.5 months old, they will come to you. Yeah. It is so easy. Right. And you're like, look at me. I'm a great dog trainer. Right. And then they get to 4.5 months of age, and it's like their world changes. They can go from seeing nothing beyond you to this entire world out there that there's butterflies and squirrels and dandelions and all the cool stuff, and they forget completely anything that you think you've taught them. You thought you were pretty hot, and then you go, oh, yeah, no, I lost this one.
But that's why it's so important to start when they're baby puppies, and every time you say, Simba, come, and you give them a cookie – and lots of praise, then you have some chance at some point down the road when they hit that age where they're like, what, me? Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, perhaps that little bit of practice you did early on can help.
And I think that's a really important thing too, is it's Simba come, it's not Simba come.
Yes.
And it's really hard, especially for men that have a deep voice, to understand that the puppy's not going to respond well to that kind of technique, and that food treats are absolutely fine. People are like, well, he should just know to come. No, they don't. No. And I tell people this all the time. Do you have a job? Yes, I have a job. Do you get paid to go to your job? Well, of course I get paid to go to my job. Well, what would happen if your regular payday on Friday, you didn't get the direct deposit or your check wasn't there on Friday? What would you do? Would you come back to work on Monday? About half of my clients will say, yeah, I'd give them another day or two. And the other half go, no, I'm out. Well, okay, this is the same thing. You have to pay your puppy for some of these behaviors. And they're not just going to do it because you're a cool person. They're going to do it because you have convinced them that they get paid. And if that payment is a piece of cheese or a piece of chicken, it has to be something really good, because a dry piece of dog food isn't going to cut it.
Simba likes his kibbles, but
not enough.
No, he does. Enough. That's what he works for. He works for kibbles, but he's special.
Okay, not every dog will.
Okay, no, I know not every dog will. But, you know, like I said, Simba is sort of the reincarnation of many of the dogs before him. So he is a special little guy. But
good for you.
I think that the important question when you're talking about having a schedule, specifically what the listener was asking for, is set a schedule and then know that you're going to have to be flexible with it. That you may or may not actually be able to live up to your own ambitions, and that's okay.
But the very first thing that you have to keep in mind is, first thing in the morning, your puppy has to go outside immediately. So if that means dressing like a fireman, being ready to go, that's the case. If your puppy has to go out, keep your jacket at the door with a bag of treats in the pocket so that you don't have to go to the refrigerator and get out the hot dog and then go find the leash and then go find the poop bags. Everything needs to be like at the door, ready to go at a moment's notice, including your flashlight and your leash and your poop bags and all this stuff. Your boots, if it's snowing or raining, whatever it happens to be, so that the puppy doesn't have to wait. Because when they have to go, they have to go. So first thing when they wake up, it doesn't matter how many naps they take during the day. As soon as they wake up from a nap, they go outside to go potty. As soon as they wake up in the morning, they go outside and go potty. Before you go to bed at night, the last thing you do is go out and go potty. And then all the other stuff fits in around the three meals a day, because, and I think three meals a day are really important till puppies are 6 months old. And after that, my dogs get two meals a day for the rest of their lives. I'm never at a once a day feeder because it's not healthy for them. They're more likely to bloat. They're less easily housebroken. If you feed puppies three meals a day, they're going to eat, they're going to poop, and it's going to make your life a lot better to have that kind of a schedule, that you know that every afternoon at 2 o'clock or between 1:30 and 3, your puppy's going to have a stool. So you know that that's when you need to schedule enough time to go outside and hang out with the dog until they magically perform whatever it is that you're asking them to do. And you can teach them to go potty and have a stool on command. The service dog people are experts at this. So don't tell me that you can't do that, because people that are in a wheelchair that work in a building with an elevator can learn, their puppies can learn that they have to go outside. And when they're told they better go, they better go. And that's actually a very important skill to teach.
Yes.
And you can. Your dog is smart enough to learn to do these things.
Yes. They go pee, go potty. You know, everybody has their own commands. You can pick what's perfect for you, but just throwing them out the door and assuming they're doing their business doesn't necessarily work when they're baby puppies. And they're like, well, what? I put him out. Why is he coming? Because he was distracted. He was running around. He was digging a hole. He was chasing a leaf, you know, like.
And you didn't observe.
Right.
And the other thing that's important is the consistency of terminology, because a lot of people will use multiple terms. And so everyone in your family needs to use the same word for sit, the same word for down. Down is different than off. Off means stop jumping on me. Down means lie down on the floor with all 4 feet underneath you. So you have to be consistent, because dogs commanded the English language. They may learn 200 or 300 words, but they don't know synonyms. So you got to pick the word that your family is going to use, and everyone has to use it. So if you want to use Swahili for poop, great, use Swahili, but you can't use Swahili one day and English the next and expect the poor dog to have any kind of an inkling of what you're talking about. So you have to have one of these, especially if you have young children, kind of a family meeting to come to terms with what are these words that we're going to use so that there's consistency.
Yes. And the other thing that I think is really important is that we learn how to, if you will, my terminology, speak dog, right?
Yeah.
Dogs probably understand some words, but honestly, what they understand is your tone of voice. And your tone of voice when you say, Simba, come, is not the same as when you say, Simba, come. They hear the tone. They do not hear the words. If you say, Simba, you're a terribly bad dog, they hear the tone. They don't hear the words. And right. So learning that piece, I think, is absolutely imperative. And it's also imperative that you understand that dogs hear come as a question, not as a statement. And when you make a statement, like your dog needs to come to you or your dog needs to sit or whatever it is, that statement needs to have the tonal inflection of a statement, not a question. So when I ask you something, Marty, are you okay? Your voice rises. When I make a statement, Marty, you're okay, your voice goes down. Right.
I am. Are you sure?
You are totally fine. I do this for okay. the dogs all the time. I promise you, you're just fine.
Okay. Thank
you. So that is such an important part of communicating with our dogs.
Yeah.
Like, you have to understand they aren't hearing gobbledygook, gobbledygook. You sound like the teacher on Peanuts to them.
Wah, 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 wah.
But they hear tone and they see body posture and right. they read your facial expressions. If they are looking at you and you are frowning and steam is coming out your ears and your face is bright red, they're going the other direction because they know you're angry, even if you're not.
Right.
This is what they see, is what they hear, is what they do.
Right. And you also want to make sure that you're teaching the dog that one command is what you're asking for.
Yes.
It's not sit, 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 sit. No, I know. It drives all of us crazy because the dog is in like, okay, until you've said sit 12 times, the dog's like, I'm not doing it. No, the dog needs to learn one command is what you're exactly asking them to do. And this is probably a little petty, but you don't have to say please and thank you to your dog because your dog doesn't really care if you say please and thank you. You're not training a 3-year-old. You're talking to a dog. Sit means sit. There's actually a dog training facility called that in Milwaukee.
Sit means sit.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty great name.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean sit, 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 sit. It means
sit.
Sit. You say it with distinction. You say it clearly. You don't garbledygook it up with a bunch of other things. You just look at the dog in the eye and you say sit. And you can use your hand signal with it. You can lure them into that
your
position.
Food. Right.
Lots of things you can do, but you say it once.
Once. Yes. Mm-hmm. So my famous and oft-repeated sentiment is that every way that we communicate with our dogs, everything that we do with our dogs should be firm, which is the sit, one statement, not please, pretty please, could you please just come on, could you just like get your butt on the ground, like, right? No, sit, okay? Firm. Firm does not mean, you know, I'm going to beat
That's
you or
mean.
I am beating you.
No,
firm
just,
means I mean it.
A solid,
I mean it.
Yeah.
I meant it the first time. I didn't mean it 16 times later. Firm, fair. You cannot ask a dog to do something and then correct them for not doing it if they don't know it. And if they're
right.
not doing it, I promise you they don't know it. They're not being recalcitrant like a 3-year-old is recalcitrant. Okay? They don't know. And if they don't know, then that's your fault, not theirs. And so you mm-hmm. have no right getting mad at that dog. Firm, fair, consistent is the one you were talking about. Same words. Everybody has the same, like it's a family thing. But it's also this one. And this is like you have your pet peeve about don't say please and thank you. My pet peeve is the people that the dog jumps up on them and they love on it and they give it all kind of kisses. Dog gets down, goes and does something else, comes back, jumps up on him, and they beat it. Get off me! What are you doing, you filthy beast? Like, no. No. Stop it. Like, seriously, stop it. If it's fine to jump up on you, it's fine to jump up on you all the time. If it is not fine to jump up on you, it is not fine to jump up on you all of the time. Firm, fair, consistent.
Right. They don't know that you have on your pantyhose and your good white dress.
Nope.
That's different than jeans. The dog doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
It's not the dog's fault if you're wearing jeans, and it's okay for them to do those things when you're wearing jeans, but not when you're wearing other items. So it's absolutely ridiculous to expect the dog to know the difference. They don't pay the dry cleaning bill and they don't understand it.
Nope.
Not fair.
So that's my big piece. Okay. So I think that applies for puppies, for young dogs. What are some of your favorite tricks for teaching old dogs new tricks?
Well, we kind of touched on the long line, and I think that's a really important tool, regardless of age. A long line is basically like a lunge line. It's a 20-foot long, lightweight leash with a clip on it that you can clasp under the dog's collar. And that way, if you're in the process of training something and the dog isn't cooperating, you've got the ability to kind of reel them in and get their attention and then teach them what you're asking them to do. So that involves the food treated, that involves the word, the command, all those things. So I think a long line is useful in a multitude of situations. My favorite thing for teaching an old dog new tricks is basically breaking it down into small sections so that they understand it and just rewarding it. I think we all have the same philosophy on, you know, the dog can't learn to do a complicated trick. It's like when you go to agility class, they teach it in little bite-sized pieces. And you kind of have to back chain so that the dog learns what comes in front of it and in front of it and in front of it. And that's the same way that dogs learn unfortunate things like thunderstorms are scary.
Right.
First they hear the thunder and then they see the lightning and then they start to realize that the barometric pressure is changing. So they back chain. They learn what precedes that. When you leave the house in the morning before you go to work, they start to back chain. They start to figure out, oh, she picks up her keys. Oh, wait, she puts on a certain pair of shoes. Oh, wait, she opens the refrigerator and gets out her lunch. They start to back chain. And so you have to take advantage of that. It works to the negative, but it works to the positive as well, as break it into little bitty pieces that allow the dog to learn. Walking down a flight of stairs. You can't walk from the top of the flight of the stairs all the way down in one fell swoop unless you fall. So you'd go up one step and bring them down, and then you go up two steps and bring them down, and then you go up three steps. So they start to learn pieces that are manageable in their little brains because they're pretty smart. But, I mean, dogs are incredibly smart.
Yeah,
I am never going to say
ridiculously smart. Some more than others, but yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. They're not all created equal any more than people are. But it does help for you to assemble that into bite-sized pieces, and then you start putting the pieces together. It's just like running an agility course. You don't go out there the first time and think the dog can do 10 different exercises all chained together.
Right.
It takes bits and pieces.
Yeah, I think that's super important. And we've had, you know, you've done rescues, I've done rescues over the years, and, you know, some of them more successfully than others.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but I think that just as a dog, say you've decided to adopt an older rescue dog, right? And helping that dog adjust to a new environment, learn new boundaries. You know, maybe it didn't have those boundaries and now it needs to have those boundaries. So how we do that, you were talking about the long line. One of my favorite tricks for an older dog, and we're actually doing this right now. Kim has a new lap dog that has come to sit with him, and it's a young adult Laotian. But it needed a whole different set of boundaries for our house. And so he's on a leash and the leash goes with him. You know, he's on a leash in the house so that he knows this is the routine. You go from here to here to here. This is an acceptable thing to do. You can chew on this milk carton if that's what makes you happy. That's fine. But we're going to do this in a controlled environment. And I think that so often we want to give our dogs more freedom than is good for them. Mm-hmm. How would you think about that?
Oh, for sure. Dogs want to have structure.
Yes.
And if we don't give it to them, then they start to make up things. And then we get frustrated when they have made up the wrong decision. Yeah. So absolutely. I mean, tethering a dog to your belt loop is a wonderful tool for keeping an eye on them, especially with puppies that may disappear around the corner and go. I mean, statistically, under the dining room table and in the extra bedroom are where dogs have urinary and fecal accidents, because when they go in those rooms, they don't get yelled at. I inadvertently trained our Labrador to urinate on my bed. When she was 9 months old, she was still not completely, well, she was housebroken because she knew she was supposed to go outside. But she also knew that if she didn't get outside and she went into the bedroom and urinated on the bed, no one would catch her, so she didn't get yelled at. So that seemed like an acceptable solution to her. Well, we had a little discussion about that and learned to keep the bedroom door closed pretty quickly because a 9-month-old Labrador has a fairly good sized bladder. So it didn't take me more than twice to figure out to shut the bedroom door. I trained fairly quickly, and then that trained the dog. But I mean, simple things like that, like the dog was housebroken. She knew, but she had learned the wrong thing. Right. We sometimes do that when we housebreak dogs inadvertently, is when the dog goes potty on the floor in the house, then what do? You yell at them and you clean it up, right? Mm-hmm. And so the dog has learned, never, ever let anyone see you urinate or have a stool, which means when you're on the walk, out on the neighborhood walk, you know, you could walk for 2 miles and the dog's like, nope, never let them, never let them see you
poopy.
No, because that human is going to lose their mind when they see it. No. They got the wrong message. And that's our fault. When that's the message that the dog got, we have sent the wrong message. Yes. So that's our fault. So those are the things that I think hang people up a lot, is that they don't realize what they just taught the dog.
Yes. And they realize what the dog has taught them.
Exactly. My mom used to have a Dalmatian, and when she was on a certain medication, she would hump their beanbag chair. And she called me one day and she said, Domino is continuing to hump the chair. And I said, okay, so what happens when she does that? And she said, I give her an ice cube, which was her favorite treat. And I said, so what do you think you just did, Mom? And she said, I tried to distract her. I said, Mom, what did you just do? And she goes, I trained her to hump the bed so that she would get an ice cube. I'm like, yes, you did. You have to turn it and look at it from the dog's perspective. I said, well, how about we stop reinforcing that behavior?
Yeah.
And it went away. So you can extinguish certain behaviors. Sometimes you have to train a competing behavior. Sometimes you can extinguish a behavior. So those are all concepts that you have to start taking a step back and looking at the dog. And then Ian Dunbar talks a lot about lures, rewards, and bribes and the differences between those. And so that gets into a kind of a philosophical discussion, but it helps you think differently about what are you doing with the dog? Are you luring it? Are you bribing it? Or are you rewarding the behavior? And I think if you dissect apart what you're doing, it helps you to look at it from the dog's perspective.
And keep in mind, a bribe is not a negative thing.
No, you know, I mean, it is
in a dog's world, bribe is not negative.
Right. No. The dog is perfectly fine to be bribed.
Yeah.
And if that's what it takes,
I bribe a lot of dogs.
There's nothing. Yeah, it's not illegal to bribe your dog. It's illegal to bribe political officials, but it's not illegal to bribe your dog. So go ahead. Go for
it. It's just amazing. I think sometimes what people don't realize their dogs have taught them. The other one that I think, just kind of our final wrap up.
Wrapped around their little finger.
So well trained the owner is. The other thing that I think, just as a final wrap up, and I think people, this is one that I think a lot of people misunderstand. And frankly, I fight the urge to do this. We hear our dogs barking, and so we yell at them to shut up. And I'm telling you, I struggled with this myself. I know this is a thing. The dog barks, we yell out the door, be quiet. The dog thinks we're barking with them, so it barks some more.
Yeehaw, we're having a
barkathon.
That's right. And that's truly, I think, what happens.
Yes. Other distractions are a better solution when the dog is barking than to join in the chorus. That is one I've had to work on a lot myself. So there you go.
It does take some self-control.
There are days, man. Agatha! You've probably heard me all the way in Wisconsin.
And she says it right back to you. Laura! Yeah.
There's a monster, mummy.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, Marty, great to see you. Listeners, we had a little thunderstorm interruption. So thunderstormus interruptus, be damned. We still got you your episode together. So anybody has a request out there in listener land, remember, we're here for you. Just drop us a note, like, share, subscribe, follow, all the things. We appreciate you guys. Good night.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Marty and Laura Show. We're excited to bring you these unique,
fun, fact-based conversations about pet health. From pro tips on selecting your new dog to what your cat's cough means and what you should do about it. We'll meet you wherever you are, in the car, on the treadmill, walking the dog. And we'll bring you a good laugh, a great story, and a bright idea every week. We hope you'll join us on social. Stop by the website to sign up for an extra tip of the week for your pet. While you're at it, do us a favor, please, and leave a review wherever you find your podcasts. The Marty and Laura Show is produced by Pure Dog Talk, Inc. Sound design and editing by Premium Audio Services.